I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, gang violence hits one of Seattle's most lucrative tourism sectors. Meanwhile, new texts show the incompetence that was on display inside the socialist mayor's office after a gang shootout at Seattle Center. And it's official. The Seattle Times has hit rock bottom. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I hope you had a relaxing Labor Day weekend. Not so relaxing for the Seattle Police Department that was responding to shooting after shooting after shooting, and not really in your typical areas of gang violence. You know, it's not South Seattle, for instance. And I got to say, I started with this because I can't think of a worse image for Seattle's tourism industry than this one. Hazmat crews cleaning up pools of blood on the walkway that takes people to the cruise ships, with a cruise ship in port in the background. I mean, that is the stuff of nightmares for Visit Seattle, for the hotels, for the restaurants, for the cruise industry. Because typically, if you've got, you know, 3rd and Pike, and you got the homeless drug addicts on 3rd and Pike, and they're, you know, causing a problem there, you can avoid that area. Gang shooting, South Seattle, no reason tourists are going to South Seattle anyway. 12th and Jackson in the Chinatown International District, easy enough to avoid. This is not easy to avoid. You have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of tourists that walk that pedestrian bridge, and they're greeted in the morning, on a holiday weekend, by hazmat crews cleaning up pools of blood. And look, I posted social media maybe a couple weeks ago. I was down at Seattle's waterfront, and I was with some friends, and we had lunch, and we, you know, walked around, and it was beautiful. And I even said as much. I said it was a lovely day down by Pike Place Market. And I got some conservatives in there saying, well, you know that it's just hiding this. Of course I know. Of course I know. I'm not saying because I went down there one time and had a lovely day with my friends that I've forgotten that it's taken over by a criminal element. But it has the capacity to be nice down there. When there's a lot of positive foot traffic, it's a nice, pleasant place to be. The issue is, of course, when you see things like this, like a hazmat crew cleaning up pools of blood in a tourist area, it has the effect of meaning that less positive foot traffic is going to come to the city. Because I could tell you what, individuals who were on that Queen Elizabeth cruise, who had to walk past the hazmat crews cleaning up pools of blood from a shooting overnight, they're probably not going to take another cruise that comes to port in the city of Seattle. So this was just one of three shootings that happened in rapid succession over the weekend. So Sunday, this is the one that we were just showing you a picture of the aftermath of. Police posting 5 in the morning that there was a shooting down there on the pedestrian bridge that left a 17-year-old male dead, a 21-year-old male seriously injured. Then Sunday, an hour later, they posted detectives investigating a deadly shooting that left an adult woman deceased in Belltown. And then Monday, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, detectives investigating a deadly shooting that left one adult male dead, 3 additional people injured near the Belltown neighborhood. Now, what's going on in Belltown? Belltown has always been a little bit sketchy, to be frank, but we did a special on this before the World Cup. The city of Seattle, whether they will admit it or not, were trying to push all the ne'er-do-wells out of that core area from Pike Place down to the stadium. So they pushed them in Chinatown, and then they pushed them up to Belltown, because fewer tourists will make the walk to Belltown. And then also in Belltown, what do you have? You have a bunch of the social service agencies, the homelessness agencies, where people literally tent outside so they can get up in the morning and get their free stuff. And whenever you have a concentration of things like that, including the homelessness housing, affordable apartments for the homeless, you're going to have an increase in issues. Wherever you have substance abuse, you have drug dealers. Wherever you have drug dealers, you have gang violence. And these are clearly acts of gang violence. Young black men. There's a theme here. Here's Andrea Suarez, who was rightfully horrified. She loves the city. She's the founder of We Heart Seattle. Here she was down at the crime scene cleanup.
I'm seeing this grim sight of the hazmat guys.
Where a 17-year-old was murdered last night. What a sight.
Yeah, you're walking around a crime scene.
It's like Baghdad.
This gentleman just said this is like Baghdad, and he is not wrong.
That a suspect is still not in custody.
Three murders in the last 24 hours right where you're standing. Nowhere to be found is the mayor. There's no cameras. There's no cops in this lawless city. Be very careful. There's no police. There's no chaplains. There's no concerned neighbors. There's a lot of tourists walking right through this crime scene.
Yeah, they're never coming back. They're never coming back. And you see the look on one of them's face of the bags like, oh my gosh. And I guarantee, because I will get it after this segment. If I haven't, if my phone hasn't already started blowing up, whenever I am critical of the crime issue in and around the tourist areas, I always get texts from the same old characters who own hotels, who own restaurants. Brandy, can you not be so hard on downtown Seattle? We're trying to make a living and your coverage doesn't help us. Look, our coverage is the truth. And I'm sure Andrea Suarez gets the same thing. Like, they want us to hide what's going on because it hurts their businesses. And look, I'm as pro-business as it gets. I want all those businesses to be able to do very well. But people hiding the reality of what's happening, you have to realize, is not going to make that reality go away. The only thing that will make that horrible reality going away is to call it out for what it is, to call out the failures of leadership that allow for it, and for people to vote different. So spare me your texts of righteous indignation, just saying, Brandy, I mean, you know, we can't have you putting out these segments that a bunch of people will see and not bringing it. How about you focus your ire on City Hall? How about you focus on getting people elected to public office who don't want to give a slap on the wrist to gang members? Who don't want to go to Olympia and pass laws that mean that gang members can get caught with a gun 5 times before you'll do anything about it? I mean, to text me, and it happens all the time, to text me with a, don't tell people about this. What do you think my job is? I support you, but if I'm balancing truth versus the cloak that you want me to put over truth, it's always going to be the truth. The interim Seattle police chief came out and held a press conference about the violence over the weekend, Andre Sales.
Looking at ways to where we can identify individuals that are known, we call them trigger pullers in our community, identifying them, making sure that we're putting cases on those individuals, working with King County Prosecutor's Office to bring these individuals to justice.
So now they're trigger pullers. Fine. Maybe that is something lingo that police use, but they're gang members. They will say every word and every label except gang member, gang bangers. Remember after the mass shooting at the Bight of Seattle? Oh, these were groups of young men who knew each other. Gang members, okay? It's gun violence, the trigger pullers, groups that had a beef with one another. I've said it a million times, say it with me. You cannot solve a problem that you refuse to properly identify. And that you refuse to do what needs to be done to fix. I can go on for hours and hours about what we've talked about on this show before, where they let these young black men off the hook repeatedly from the age of 12 to 18 because, oh my gosh, woe is you. You're a victim of your circumstances. You're a victim of the pigmentation of your skin. We don't want to put you in jail. We don't want to put you in juvenile detention. We don't want to put you in prison. So it's okay for the armed robbery. It's okay for the drive-by shooting. Don't worry, you didn't kill anyone. You narrowly missed some innocent civilians, but not a big deal. And then what happens? Then they're 18 and then they go kill someone or they're killed in a gang shooting. Can't save them then, can you? The most empathetic thing to do for these young men is to punish them early and often. So they understand there is accountability for their conduct. Otherwise, you are giving them a death sentence. You're giving them a death sentence after they turn 18. Either a cold death sentence on a sidewalk somewhere or a cold death sentence on a cot in a state prison. But, oh, that doesn't feel good. That doesn't make us feel good to do that. And I'm not saying you don't do other things to change their circumstances. Like, I don't know, give them a quality education, not whatever woke bullshit you're doing in the last 5 years. Giving them a quality education, teaching them skills that are marketable in the economy. No. So you go to school, no punishment if you don't, no punishment if you fail. Go out, cause problems with your friends from a young age, don't worry about it. Your skin pigmentation means that you don't have to be accountable for this. And then people die. Like that 17-year-old. The blood they were cleaning up off the pedestrian bridge to the cruise ships, the blood of a 17-year-old boy. Blood of a 17-year-old boy. And guess what? If it hadn't been his blood, it would have been the blood of someone else that he spilled. It's just outrageous. And where was Seattle Socialist Mayor Katie Wilson over the weekend while all this violence was happening in her city? Not at that press conference with Interim Chief Andre Sales. She was picketing. Joining picketers, workers who've been on strike at the Hilton Embassy for like, what, 3 months? Along with Girmay Zahalai. She's with her child. So is King County Executive Girmay Zahalai. Walk in the picket line. How absolutely stupid can you get? Not only is she absent from, you know, the crime, and I think one news station asked her, you know, about at that picket, at that strike, about the violence. And she's like, oh, SPD has it handled, you know. Do they? I don't know. But she's already been so absent on the criminal justice issue, and so she wants to go have a photo op with striking workers while her city's economy is crumbling. How did it go last time after she was elected mayor when she was outside of Starbucks calling for a boycott of Starbucks? Do you remember what happened, Katie? Yeah, Starbucks opened an HQ on the complete opposite side of the country, as far away from you and your policies as they could possibly get. They have laid off hundreds of people. They've closed dozens of stores. It didn't go well for you. Your whole bye to millionaires who are going to flee over the income tax. And now, instead of dealing with the quality of life issues, the crime issues, you're going to make them worse by scaring away businesses and job creators, by, as the mayor, choosing to be on a picket line instead of doing your job. It's like you want the city to fail. It's the only thing that makes sense. Also, over the weekend, there was so much stuff that happened over the weekend. We could do a 10-hour show about it today. Also over the weekend, the text came out that everybody and their mother had been waiting for the internal communications between the Seattle Police Department, the mayor's office, in the aftermath of the Bite of Seattle shooting, which was the mass shooting gang shootout at the Bite of Seattle at Seattle Center at the end of July. Now, I could go over all these in excruciating detail. I'm not going to. I want to give you some broad takeaways. It shows what we all know to be true. She's just incompetent. She's listless. She's looking to everyone but herself for leadership and direction. So in these text messages, her staff is telling her, don't go. Don't go down to Seattle Center. And reminder, you know, there was a 5-hour window where the public had not been briefed on this. And I'll dive into a couple of these because there are clearly people on her staff. One of them is Jonah Spangenthal Lee. He's a former journalist in Seattle, and he's worked in public affairs at the Seattle Police Department and then the mayor's office. And he's in here like, I really think the mayor should go down there. Like, hey, guys, we haven't put out any statements yet. I really think we should get a statement out. You can tell he's got the mind of a journalist thinking this does not look good. And he's being ignored. And the mayor's communications director, you know, offers a couple different reasons for not sending the mayor down there. You know, says they're still holding people in one of the movie theaters. Sounds like an active investigation with a possible suspect on scene. It's not stable. They express concern that she wouldn't be safe down there or that she would be in the way of an active criminal investigation. by her presence. They also thought, send her to Harborview Medical Center there, where some of the victims have been taken. One of the responses was, well, I don't feel like an elected politician should show up to a trauma scene and draw attention to themselves. And look, as I'm reading this, I don't really necessarily disagree. But just say that. Come out and say that. Put out a statement from the mayor's office in that moment. I communicate for a living, but I'm not a PR flacky. And even I know. I don't necessarily disagree that during an active criminal investigation where you don't know if another shooter is on the loose, that bringing the mayor of the city down there to the scene, she's going to have security, is a distraction. I do not disagree with that at all. Say that. Say it. You could have said it at any point in the last 2 months. Say, hey, you know, the reason why we didn't have the mayor down there right away is we didn't want to be in the way. And I would have been like, that makes sense. And then also, that doesn't explain why in those 5 hours, if you were keeping the mayor away as to not get in the way of things, that still could have allowed the Seattle Police Department to brief the media that was on scene, right? So it's just absolutely everywhere. And the mayor was also saying in there, really quick before we move on to the next ones, Chris Daniels is calling me, FYI, Chris Daniels with Como News. Matt says Como is broadcasting that I and city council are expected to be there. We should consider whether I should come down to talk to Como if the expectation has been created. I'm sure they would love to spin an absent mayor story. So she's asking her staff. First of all, one of the reasons she wants to go down is she doesn't want an absent mayor story. But throughout these text messages, she's asking her staff, you know, do you think I should go down there? Do you think I should go down there? There's no leadership there. There's a leadership vacuum. And then you've got a million different staffers on the text who think a million different things and nobody can make a decision. So then they decide finally, okay, we're going to have her go down there. So it's total like flip-flop, right? And this Allison Holcomb, who I believe is her, and then Dawn Schellenberg, they're on her communications team, I believe. So it says, I spoke with Matt, who's on site. He is aware the mayor was recommended to not go. If it's possible, there's still a suspect on scene. They say, thank you, Mayor, for your patience. And then eventually she says, should I call EPU and head down there now? That's the mayor. Her team responds, yes, get EPU and go. Meet at the turnaround at the Space Needle at EMP. It says, Dawn and Jonah, can you update a few talking points for the mayor at the end of the statement? So they've now all of a sudden changed gears. Not clear what made them do that. But it's fairly, it says, SPD is doing a media avail at 9:45. I've let them know the mayor needs to be a part of it. They're working on it. So they keep her at Seattle City Hall, They learn that there's going to be a press briefing finally from Seattle PD, you know, 4 or odd hours or so after the shooting. So then they decide, okay, we'll send the mayor down, let SPD know that the mayor has to be a part of it. And so then these are the last ones I want to go over. It's all just incompetence. And so now they're telling the mayor essentially what she should say. Now, remember how this went, and I should have pulled the clip. I just didn't think about it. But remember that the Seattle mayor opened this press conference at the Bite of Seattle shooting. The very first words came from the Seattle mayor. And remember, she was like waxing poetic about what a travesty and tragedy the shooting was. And then she starts getting yelled at by members of the press, like, yeah, that's all good. Do we have that clip now? Okay, let's play that clip. 1 second, we've got it. We're queuing it up for you. Because this is gonna now make a lot of sense.
What happened here today at the Seattle Center was an unbelievable tragedy and a horrific act of violence. My heart right now is with the victims and their families and with everyone in our community who is reeling from what happened here today. We have far too much gun violence in this city and in this country. And we're coming off of a week in Seattle where we've had 3 major incidents of gun violence in just a few days. We have a lot of work to do as a city and as a country to make this better.
I get your passion, Mayor, but we need to know what happened tonight, please.
Yes. So our focus now
shut up.
Is with this investigation, with learning what happened so that we can provide accurate information to the public, with supporting the victims. I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Chief Tyrone Davis to tell you what we know.
So at the time, remember, we blasted that. Like, why wouldn't you start with the details? You haven't briefed the public in 5 hours. Well, now we know why, because she gets horrible advice from people on her staff. The mayor's statement is general and focused on family and community impacts. It's good for her to take the lead in acknowledging those impacts and letting everyone know we'll share more as we learn it. And so they sent her the statement, and she responded, even she knew. She said, the statement looks good to me, but it's very general, so it won't satisfy anyone looking for actual information. To which her staff tells her, us going first serves an important purpose, like first at the press conference, of acknowledging traumatic events as multifaceted and involving multiple city and community partners. It's important to uplift SPD's critical contributions and also important not to place all the burden of grappling with these events on our police. What the hell are you even talking about? They've spent so much time texting back and forth during this whole ordeal. Think if they spent that time, I don't know, putting statements out to the public. None of this would have ever happened. She is surrounded by incompetent people. She's an incompetent surrounded by incompetence. Again, I'm not a PR flacky, and I can see just how incompetent they are. They did her dirty that night. They did her no favors that night. And since these texts have been revealed, we learned that Jonas Spangenthal Lee is no longer with the mayor's office. Whether he quit or something else, but he was the only sane one in the whole bunch. He was the only one telling them, you guys, we haven't said anything. What is going on? We need the mayor somewhere. We need a press conference. So now, one of the only sane messengers, and Jonah's like super far left, but he's a nice guy. I've gotten along with him over the years, but he's thinking like a journalist about what the public needs to know. So one of the only sane people from that whole debacle who is like, this doesn't look good. Now he's not there anymore. So it's going to get worse. It's just absolutely outrageous. And we've got 3.5 more years of this. 3.5 more years of this. I mean, look, it's good. It's great. Don't get me wrong. It's great for the show. It is so great for the show. Nonstop content. But if I had to choose the show or, I don't know, people's lives, I'm going to choose people's lives. If I had to choose the show over the survival of Seattle's economy, I'm going to choose the survival of Seattle's economy. Good grief. We can't do this for 3.5 more years. All right, coming up next, a major victory for free speech. We'll discuss first. Tara says, I switched my homeowner's insurance to Firstmark, saved $1,600 a year, and have far better coverage. Tara took the Firstmark challenge. You should too. I love Firstmark Insurance. I use them for my home and my business here on Undivided. And this year they saved Mike and I $2,000 on our renewal. And who couldn't save money with the cost of gas, which we're going to talk about later on. Thanks, Donald Trump and Jay Inslee, to be fair. Thanks, Donald Trump and Jay Inslee. But yes, gas is very expensive right now. All you have to do is go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and take the Firstmark challenge. There have been over 11,000 Firstmark challenge victories here in Washington State. So don't give your insurance company a free raise. Before you renew, let Firstmark review. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com. What are you waiting for? Your savings could start tomorrow. firstmarkinsurance.com. All right, this story takes us back to 2022. You know, post-2020 era, what became very in vogue? Land acknowledgments. Oh, yes, we have to acknowledge whose land we're on. Not give it back. No, not leave it. But, you know, acknowledge that it is stolen and that we shall never give it back. So UW's Paul G. Allen School of Computer Science, they mandated all faculty include a land acknowledgement statement in their classroom syllabus. So this is 2022. So Professor Stuart Regis published a parody of the more accepted land acknowledgement in his syllabus. It read, I acknowledge that by the labor theory of property, the Coast Salish people can claim historical ownership of almost none of the land currently occupied by the University of Washington. So he did a little play on the land acknowledgement using facts and reason and said, yeah, they can't lay claim to this land whatsoever. So, of course, it's 2022 and everybody tries to cancel everyone for everything. And so some people got mad. And so the Allen School put out this statement. We became aware of this offensive statement. Like, really? Think about that. I mean, it's just crazy. We became aware of this offensive statement a few hours ago. We're horrified by it and are working on getting it removed from the syllabus. Meanwhile, we have removed the document from our course website. So, whether they knew it or not, Professor Stuart Regis was a little bit of a First Amendment badass. We had him on the show previously for Sundays with Subscribers in the midst of all of this, but his activism on free speech goes back to his earliest days teaching in institutions of higher education on the East Coast. And so throughout his career in academia, he's always sought to push limits on free speech in public institutions, for instance. So this really was in part a test that he wanted to give the University of Washington. You know, if you're going to mandate us to give this land acknowledgement, I want to give my own version of the land acknowledgement. Will you say that that's not okay? And indeed, they said it wasn't okay. And so earlier this year, this is when we had him on the show for an in-depth interview, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit ruled in a 2-1 decision that UW had retaliated against him, that they violated his right to free speech. And they also said that part of that retaliation included giving students like an alternate class they could go to so they didn't have to go to his class, like a rival course. He was investigated, all this stuff. So over the weekend, the University of Washington agreed to pay Professor Stuart Regis $600,000 to settle his free speech claims. That is a victory. We invited Stuart Regis back on the show to talk about it. Professor Regis, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me again.
How are you feeling? Vindicated? How would you describe it?
It's pretty great. You know, I guess my big disappointment is that they continue to say that they did nothing wrong. They can't find anything that they did wrong, which is just crazy to me. But, you know, they had to pay $600,000 to be able to say that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you didn't do anything wrong, why are you writing a $600,000 check?
Well, and they eliminated Executive Order 31, which was the, you know, actually one of the most important parts of the case. They did it very quietly last summer.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So what are the other implications of this settlement beyond the monetary implication?
Well, there's some pain for them, right? You know, that $600,000 is not an easy thing to give away. So maybe they'll be a little more careful in the future, thinking about the First Amendment rights of people on campus. And I was hoping that there would be some kind of something from them, you know, that that would indicate that maybe things might change on campus, but I'm not seeing it. You know, they dug in. They did nothing wrong. And I don't know if you know, but the other state schools, Washington State University and Central, Eastern and Western Washington all filed an amicus brief, basically saying we need to be able to do the kind of thing that UW did with Stuart to be able to have a safe learning environment. Can you believe that? I mean, we're back to safe spaces on campus. They have to make sure that that students aren't forced to hear something that would upset them. You know, oh my God, you know, college might cause you to hear ideas that upset you, you know, and that you'd have to defend.
It's almost as if you might have to, I don't know, do that in real life after college and should prepare yourself for the possibility that you'll be confronted with views you disagree with. You mentioned Executive Order 31 that they quietly did away with. What did that do again?
So that basically said that if we think that you said something that was inappropriate, even if it doesn't rise to the level of legal harassment, we can punish you. I mean, it was just ridiculously vague. You know, so they could basically go after anybody for anything that they found offensive.
Yeah. Well, what do you think caused them to do away with it? Was it this case or?
There was another thing going on where they were getting pressure from the Justice Department. So I think they had to rewrite it anyway. But I hope that our case kind of convinced them not to recreate the language from Executive Order 31. They rewrote an Executive Order 81, but it doesn't have that objectionable language.
Yeah. So you're still at the University of Washington, correct?
That's right. Yep. Still there.
I know last time we had you in, one of the concerns is that, you know, they sort of made it more difficult for you to be able to do what you wanted to do at the University of Washington. Does that continue? And do you expect sort of this soft retribution, given that they now had to write you a big check?
I think so. I think that, you know, that I'm not going to be allowed to teach required courses. You know, that was one of their principles, is students, you know, nobody taking a required course can, you know, is going to be forced to take it from me. That'll probably continue. But, you know, I mean, things thaw a little bit over time. There's a little more of asking me to get involved in projects. You know, there's a lot of stuff to do on campus. So, you know, when they don't have anybody else to do something, you know, hey, maybe Stuart would want to do that.
Are you getting any support from fellow faculty and even students?
I get kind of quiet support from faculty, you know, that when we're alone in the hallway, and they look kind of make sure that no one can hear, and they'll say things like, congratulations, you know, on the case, you know, I hear it from students who come in my office and close the door. I can't tell this to my friends, but you know, I really like what you write. I wish I could say what you're saying.
Man, I was just thinking about it. I was rereading a book and I was thinking about Bolshevism and stuff over the weekend and how that's kind of reminiscent of, you know, the people who used to meet in secret and talk about, you know, oh, the truths that they weren't allowed to speak in public. I mean, it just sort of reminds me of that. You know, do you think that there's a trend in a positive direction at all in our institutions of higher learning as it pertains to free speech?
There are a lot of schools that have been doing things along these lines, although, you know, the Trump administration doesn't really understand free speech either, you know, because now they're going after people who say things that offend them. So very few people. I mean, you know, one of the things that I'll tell people is if you really believe in free speech, then you have to defend the speech that you hate. You have to be able to hear things that you think are really upsetting and say, look, I don't like what you said, but I think it would be more dangerous to censor you than to let you say what you're saying. And what Thomas Jefferson said was, you know, the cure for bad speech is more speech.
I think that's a great place to end it. All right, Professor Stuart Regis, congratulations. And it's a victory for everyone who values free speech. And I was happy to see the internet just celebrating him over the weekend. It was a feel-good win. So thank you so much. Congratulations. And we'll see what other tests you might have up your sleeve.
Thanks.
So that is UW Professor Stuart Regis, fresh off his First Amendment victory against the University of Washington. Score one for the good guys. Love that guy. I would love to take a class with that guy. Just saying, him and Cliff Mass over at UW, they just need a little sane group going on there. So a good victory for him and for the First Amendment. Coming up next, we'll get to our segment, The Seattle Times is Trash. First of all, trash, birdcage liner, fire starter, whatever you want to say. A lot of investors focused on AI, crypto, tech. You also want to make sure that your money manager is properly focused on what's happening with energy and Iran, et cetera, because energy impacts and touches every sector of the economy. So if you're not really sure if your money manager is underestimating energy's impact on your portfolio, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham and get a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Bulwark Capital. Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. There's a reason why I trust Zach and his team to manage my money. So why not get that second opinion? Doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, across social media platforms, and you get to hear from him on Swamp Watch, which we just put out a new episode last night. So just go online, search Know Your Risk Podcast, or visit knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our beloved segment. The Seattle Times is so trashy. All right, I was wrong. I was wrong. I predicted several months ago that on the three Let's Go Washington initiatives, and I was so confident, like 99.9% confident. I was telling you guys and myself, they're going to say, vote against the initiative on girl sports and parental rights. And they're going to use that. They're going to sacrifice girls and parents at the altar of woke ideology to clear the way for them to support the initiative to repeal the blatantly unconstitutional income tax. But I was wrong, because the Seattle Times has now come out against every single one of the three initiatives. They're against Initiative 001, they're against Initiative 638, and they're against Initiative 645. Now, again, some of these are not a surprise. The Seattle Times, very left ideologically, but the editorial board has traditionally been a little more sane on the issues of taxes and spending. And they've called out Democrats repeatedly, very recently, for their inability to stick to a budget, for wasting money, for passing too many new taxes. So again, the other two aren't a surprise. Seattle Times endorsements in the WA general election, no on Initiative 001, parental rights. We already talked about that on the show last week. Their rationale for it was ridiculous. I don't care what the Times has to say on that, because we're all going to vote yes to restore parental rights. I didn't see this one last week because we were just dealing with so much on the show, but they also came out opposed to Initiative 638, which says bans trans girls in sports. It does not freaking ban trans girls in sports. It bans boys from being on a girls' team. I'm sorry, but if you have to lie about it, you're not on the right side of the issue. Without getting too much into their stupid rationale, they said, oh, well, you know, there's only maybe 10 to 12 trans athletes. And so you're doing this just for 10 to 12. Okay, so if that's your rationale, you're saying then if there were more, it would be a problem? But it's only 10 to 12, so not a big, which, by the way, that number is completely made up. We can talk about it another time. Completely manufactured. They have no way of knowing. They don't track it. The state doesn't track it. So the Seattle Times just was fed that number from the state and just said, it's only 10 to 12. No big deal. Okay. How many would it be a big deal? 20, 30, 40? How many girls' titles and races would they have to lose for it to matter to you, Seattle Times? So kick rocks on that one. But this shocked me. It did, and maybe you call me naive, and that's fine. But I was at, I did a workout class on Saturday with some friends. We're having coffee afterwards, and I was like, I will bet my whole human existence, because they knew that Seattle Times was going to release its decision on the income tax initiative the following day on Sunday. I was like, there's no way they oppose the initiative to repeal the income tax. And then this slop comes out. Seattle Times recommends no on Initiative 645. I can't, and first of all, this title is very misleading because it says Seattle Times recommends no on I-645 millionaires tax. So they're almost like doing it to intentionally cloud the issue to trick people into voting no if they oppose the millionaires tax when in reality you need to vote yes, but they oppose it. Now, why am I so surprised? Well, for the reasons I just articulated, the Seattle Times basically did an editorial not too long ago apologizing. It, kind of for like the fact that so many of the people they've endorsed for office have gone to Olympia and just done a horrible job, want to spend too much money, tax too much, don't budget enough. They promise like, we're going to do better. They've been against the idea of an income tax pushed through in this manner. It's clearly unconstitutional. Their rationale is just like, well, you know, it's twofold. Well, you know, but this initiative isn't the way to go about it. What is? What in your mind is the way to go about repealing an unconstitutional income tax? To rely on the people who passed it to come to their senses and repeal it? This is our constitutionally protected right to petition our government for a regress of our grievances. And this is a grievance. This is the perfect way to do it. This is democracy in action. Oh, we just don't like the way you're going about it. What do you mean? And then in this editorial, they reinforce what they've been saying for months, which is that, like, our state can't budget, can't handle a budget. It says the governor and legislature are charged with crafting a sensible budget to fund state services, including its K-12 school system, highway network, and much more. Since 2023, they've failed to carry out this critical role effectively. Under Democratic leadership, budget writers perennially have outspent tax revenues, relying on budget gimmicks and transfers to plug gaps, like filling potholes on the highway to fiscal hell. Their mismanagement has reached the level that leading bond rating agencies recently gave the state a negative outlook, in large part for drawing down state reserves to the nation's worst level. If they don't change their ways, Washington's sterling credit rating could be downgraded. That could mean more taxpayer money is diverted to paying off debt than to providing services. These feckless budget practices must stop. But the initiative's not the way to stop it. It makes no sense. If you got out, if you cut out just a couple lines in this editorial, it reads as an editorial in support of repealing the income tax to send Democrats a message that they have to learn to budget. They have to spend wisely. But no, they just don't like Brian Haywood. They don't like conservatives. They don't like Washington. They're in bed with the unions and the Democrats. And so they just had to come up with any excuse they could to oppose all of the Let's Go Washington initiatives. So just your further solidification that the Seattle Times is trash. If you want to hear some sane people talk about this issue, on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we had a fantastic conversation with Meg Gluth. So she is the CEO of Catalent, which is a raw material provider, one of the largest in North America. And, you know, she's not and hasn't been a very political person. But this whole fight to repeal the income tax, repeal an effort to basically punish successful people. She has gotten involved with it. She came on the show to talk a little bit about why.
everybody pump the brakes. Back up. Do you want to live in a state that has an income tax, yes or no? You can labor under the delusion for as long as you want that this is a millionaire's tax. How come the Democrats refused to put into the bill, despite being asked multiple times, that this cannot go down to anybody who's not a millionaire?
Yep.
How come this includes pensions as part of its calculation of wealth?
Wow.
How come union pensions are included in that calculation of wealth? Like, some of these questions are things that we really genuinely need to ask. So do you want to live in a state that has an income tax on top of your sales tax here, your gas tax here, your B&O tax here, your excise tax here? Like, this is tough.
Yeah.
This is a tough state for that, because it's coming for you. Number two, I think we need to really get clear about the fact that every person in this state has to balance a budget, whether it's on your home checkbook from, I guess people don't use checkbook anymore, but like your BECU home checkbook, the state should have to do that too.
Yeah.
Follow the money. We're not paying for school books for kids. We're not having tremendous educational outcomes here. Not that we shouldn't fund education and we shouldn't fund teachers. I'm not saying that. But we're not having the outcomes we say that we want or that we should get. We are hiring more and more state workers. That's what we're paying for.
We're growing the size of government.
We're growing somebody's business.
Yeah.
Should it be our own and the one we work at?
Yeah.
Or should it be theirs? And do you like what their business is doing? Do you want to continue to fund that? That feels like the messaging to me, which is not a political message at all.
Yeah, it's not a political message at all. And she is one badass woman, super smart, very thoughtful. And so I highly recommend watching the full interview again with Meg Gluth, CEO of Catalent, now a champion in the fight to repeal the state's unconstitutional income tax. That was this week on Sunday. So subscribers, sign up, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show and vote yes in November to repeal the unconstitutional income tax. Vote yes in November to restore common sense parental rights, and vote yes in November to keep boys out of girls' sports, because allowing boys to play in girls' sports is just about the stupidest thing I can think of. So those are very good reasons. Yes, yes, yes. And if you haven't done so already, cancel your Seattle Times subscription. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. You know how many billions of dollars of your money the state of Washington has spent to protect fish, okay? Oh, they're digging there right now. They're digging out culverts and stuff, billions of dollars across the state, upending roadway systems and communities so the salmon can get to their home and spawn and make salmon and all this stuff. Billions of dollars. And at the same time, it turns out, a different set of billions of dollars of taxpayer funds is simultaneously being used to electrocute fish to death. You cannot make this up. Oh, this is from the Linwood Times. Sound Transit floating bridge light rail linked to mass fish deaths in Lake Washington. So apparently, this new link light rail extension across the I-90 bridge is somehow, they believe, electrocuting fishies to death, like thousands and thousands of them. Here's Sound Transit CEO Dow Constantine.
August 3rd, we were alerted by our partners at the Washington State Department of Transportation to some number of deceased fish in the vicinity of the I-90 floating bridge. And we responded immediately by deploying teams of divers and engaging fish biologists and engineers. That work identified a potential connection or correlation between fish mortality and localized portions of the bridge's cathodic protection system, specifically toward the ends of the bridges where the strings of anodes were clustered, actually resting on the lake bed in shallow water. And so we've implemented an interim solution, which was completed just 20 days later on August 23rd, lifting those strings off the lake bed and suspending them. Early analysis has shown that the majority of fish are non-native or invasive perch
and
bass, with a small number of salmon identified as well.
It's like, it was these fish. They got electrocuted. No big deal. And also, were any people electrocuted? Because that, I think we should send Dow Constantine down to check on these nodes, see what they're, who's shocking who where. But it's like, now our taxpayer money, so again, billions used to save the salmon, billions used to install a light rail extension that electrocutes the salmon, and then how many millions to fix the electrocution problem. It's just like, it's a lot. It's a lot of incompetence, all clustered in one place. Unbelievable. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord, poor fish, you know? They just die. What is wrong? Somebody call PETA. Poor fish. Can at least eat them, you know, if you're going to, and then they're cooked, and then anyway. If you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, and really one of the only advocates for housing providers in the state of Washington. And really, they help people who are small to mid-sized landlords. So you've got one rental unit, maybe you've got a dozen, and you are just really struggling under the weight of this state's housing policies and local housing policies on top of that. RHA is there to help. So reach out to them, become a member today, RHAWA.org. They can help you with screening, forms, keeping up to date with the changing rules and regulations. They've got membership events all year long, and they are out there fighting for your private property rights. RHAWA.org. All right, this is some scary stuff. I really don't believe that we're that far away from having a political class that puts people to death for wrongthink. It really isn't. I mean, that's happened so many times in history. And I think that if Democrats get back in power, and there's a lot of socialists among them, they already cheer on individual acts of political violence. They already find excuses for individual acts of political violence. And so what is, I mean, the next step for them logically is just to carry out the acts of political violence themselves. It's happened in most places, if not all, well, all places of communism, a lot of places of socialism. And this is an example of, I think, the kind of people who will be put to death. So my friend Amy Souza, known as Known Heretic online, Amy has been at some of the rallies that have happened across the country, the XXXY athletic rallies, at Fever Games, Indiana Fever Games. So she's, I've met her through that process. So they were trying to attend a Portland Thorns game, which is the women's professional soccer team in Portland. And you see what Amy was wearing on the left when they went to the soccer game. So red zippy, and then got the Portland Thorns hat, game hat, and then this scarf. Now, if you look super closely, it's almost, you almost can't see it. There's some red stitching that's XXXY, but it's like mostly covered by a scarf. So it's not like she has one of those blazing XXXY, protect girls sports, like not even that obvious. So she says, this is what I was wearing when I got ejected from the Thorns game. A call was apparently made against me that I'm transphobic. Apparently you can't go to see women's sports while having personal political beliefs in your head that you don't even share. So she said, like, look, I didn't do anything, display any signage or anything like that. I was just there existing. And they removed me. And the Thorns have come out and said, during our September 6th match against the Washington Spirit, individuals were removed from Providence Park for distributing unapproved materials, a violation of the fan experience guidelines at the stadium. We are reviewing the incident. Amy says that never happened. Like, they're literally there as fans. She's wearing that outfit, even has a Portland Thorns hat, and she says someone identified her as transphobic, so they just removed her. And it doesn't stop there. So after that happened, a group of them went to a nearby sports bar that specializes in showing women's sports game, so they could watch the game from there. And one of the people she was with, this is important, was a lesbian, okay? So they decide to go to a Portland bar called the Sports Bra. So you get it. It's like a lesbian sports bar, women's sports, etc. They sit down, they order, and then they're told to leave.
There are people that are in here that are uncomfortable with those shirts, and so I'm asking y'all to leave. If I have to call authorities to get y'all removed, I will, but I don't want to do that.
You don't No, yeah. I am just asking if you would please consider the depth of...
I have considered most of our clients, and they have why
did you let us order and sit down?
I didn't realize it until someone...
You see what? There's nothing...
I don't look at people's shirts whenever
there's nothing wrong with these shirts. What is wrong with this shirt?
I have had complaints by customers already.
What is wrong with it? I don't understand what's wrong with this shirt. Why? There's nothing wrong with these shirts.
I'll tell you right now, if that happens to me, I'm not leaving unless it's in handcuffs. I'm not leaving unless it's in handcuffs. I don't care if it's at a game or a bar, because that's the stand that we have to start to take. And you saw the older woman, she was even wearing like a pride scarf. I'm pretty sure she's a lesbian. Like in a lesbian bar for women's sports, and they have pro women t-shirts on. So they get kicked out of the game, they get kicked out of a bar. And this is the United States of America, not even for expressing or causing a disturbance. You know, at the one at the sporting event is, I think, the most concerning to me, if Amy Souza's version of events is true, that somebody just knew who she was and did not want her there. And that's just ripe for a lawsuit. So the sports bra put out a statement saying, part of our commitment to belonging means we protect our marginalized community members. We will delete comments that are hostile, threatening, or use profanity. We will block repeat offenders so they don't like the heat. At the Sports Bra, our mission is simple: support, promote, and empower all girls and women in sports. To be clear, trans girls are girls and trans women are women. No, they're not, but okay. Our mission is to support, promote, and empower girls and women in sports. Okay, it's not though, because you think trans girls are girls and trans women are women. So you're in favor of our spaces being taken over. We will always support and celebrate them at the Sports Bra. We do not tolerate messages or conduct that demean or exclude the very community we exist to serve and celebrate. It's like, no, you kicked out a lesbian because she was down with the LGB, but not down with the T. So it's just like, these people have lost their minds. That being said, look, I've said, private business, I think you should be able to literally refuse business to anyone you want for any reason. I think you should be able to kick someone out because this the color of their skin. And then societal consequences can come. And then you can be the bar that kicks someone out because they were white or black or whatever it is. But I think private business, private places. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, should businesses be able to refuse service to someone based on their political beliefs? Yes or no? Nicole?
I mean, private businesses, yes, I'm with you. I mean, that's a thing.
I agree. It's like, you know what? Sure, serve who you want. Now, that's not going to shield you from the consequence of doing so. And then, you know, people will not want to come and maybe you go out of business. But if your personal ideology matters that much to you, then by all means. So I don't necessarily, I have a more of an issue with them being removed from the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily have an issue with this bar being like, not can't be here for any reason. But now they're facing the blowback of doing so. So 45% of you say yes. 55% of you say no. Businesses shouldn't be able to remove someone based on political beliefs. So you guys are pretty split. Todd Welch says any private business should be allowed to exclude anyone for whatever reason they want or no reason. Just tell them to leave. Saying that, why would you want to give your money to any business that doesn't want you? Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at that point, you just walk out. I don't think they knew that they were going to get removed. Again, they like had at least one lesbian with them. They go to a lesbian sports bar. Let's see. Morgan, I voted yes on this just because I do believe in free market economy and letting businesses decide how they want to run themselves. We've already seen the flip side of what happens when companies go woke and then go broke. Aaron, any privately held company has the right to do what they want. That's the beauty of being a private company. Personally, I like the old school mentality. Don't ask, don't tell. We don't have to worry about whose feelings are hurt and whose aren't hurt. Yes. Hurt feelings. Kathleen, free speech, period. I will never forget that the staff of Molly Moon Ice Cream refused to serve SPD officers in uniform. And that was cheered on. Oh, they're so woke. They're so wonderful. Anyway, yeah, so pretty split on that issue. Quite interesting. All right, one more national story to get to. Gas prices suck. You probably saw that over the weekend. I saw in Eastern Washington, diesel was like at $7.08. And of course, my husband just bought a diesel truck. I was like, great job, honey. Good investment there. Makes him happy, though. So the national average which is stunning when you think about it, because most states aren't used to paying what we pay for gas. National average, $4.15 a gallon. In Washington state, the average is $5.51 a gallon. Definitely went up for the holiday weekend.
I will say I was in Arizona over the weekend, and it was even in the 450s mm-hmm. and 460s, which you almost never see in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and you also have to keep in crazy. Mind, like, the cost of living in so many of those states is so much lower. So $4 or $5 feels high here, but it's not out of the realm of what we're used to. Everything is so much more expensive here. But you get into those states in the Midwest, I mean, that's the kind of price that stops people from being able to fill up their tank. Mm-hmm. So that's really concerning, and it's coming right before the midterms.
But look at that map. It's all of us on the West Coast.
We're the worst.
But it's also, I think, a supply issue over here, and it just shows that we can't have these crazy taxes because there are natural things that happen. And I mean, Trump's effect on the gas prices isn't the only thing we have to prepare for.
No, of course not. I've said it a million times.
That's why we can't have these ridiculous taxes in the state, because you have to leave some room for this type of stuff.
Right. And if you're going to be mad about Trump increasing gas prices, you got to be mad about the CCA increasing gas prices. It's about intellectual honesty. But this looks horrible for Trump. It's like one of these things you just don't want to happen before a midterm election. Here's what Trump said about it on Truth Social. Oil prices will drop precipitously, like everything else is dropping, but more when we win the war with Iran. $3 a gallon, but ultimately below $2 a gallon. It will all happen quickly, and Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. MAGA President Donald J. Trump. That's not going to do it. It's just not going to do it.
We're getting a little impatient here,
yeah, I mean,
Mr. President.
For sure, and I don't want the Republicans to have a bloodbath in November. I think that would be very, very bad for the country. And so, yeah, you got to get this figured out. You got to get Iran figured out and let it be like right before the election and right before ballots come out. And then people are like, ooh, relief. But right now, that Truth Social post just is not going to cut it. All right. Let's see. We did our subscriber show poll. Before we get to comments from the live stream, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com is the guy you want to talk to if you're thinking about selling your home. And he says, look, you know, there are homes sitting on the market for a long time, but there's also some opportunity going on for people who want to purchase a home. For instance, you know, ongoing tech layoffs.
Housing values are still very, very high.
Yeah.
Interest rates are back up into the mid sixes, you know, putting additional financial pressure, you know, on what it costs to purchase a home and to qualify. The tech layoffs, like, this is probably icing on the cake to start to see a bit of a market's slowdown. Yeah. So you got people who should be buying right now who aren't. Consumer confidence is lower than it has been in quite some time.
Yeah, it might, you know, give people who have been on the fence about being able to afford a home an in that they wouldn't have otherwise had. But if you're looking to sell your home, you know, you could be worried about, will my home sit on the market for too long? Will I get the price that I want? Reach out to Wes. Say, Wes, Brandy told me to call you. Can you give me a free market analysis so I can just set my expectations? He'd be more than happy to help you out. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, comments from the live stream. Let's see. Miranda put a little note in here for me saying, I included a couple comments just to show how close this violence hits home for even the viewers of this show. For instance, Jennifer said, the 17-year-old was my son's good friend. Oh, wow. He was an awesome kid that spent a lot of time at our home. We don't know the details of what happened leading up to the shooting, but I just know this is heartbreaking for all who cared and loved him. And my mom's heart is crushed for his mother and all the friends of this outgoing, articulate, funny, kind boy. Yeah, I don't know anything about him. I just know that nothing good happens in Belltown around 3 a.m. on a weekend.
I think that one was after the street had been taken over and they were doing all these donuts and all of this. So, I mean, it was chaos down there. So, I mean, maybe choosing to be in the middle of people that are taking over streets wasn't a great decision.
If you're 17, you should be home.
You should be home at that time in the morning. At 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, yep. I do want to read Carlene's.
Carlene says, the Belltown one with a 17-year-old, 21-year-old fighting for his life is the family friends, or are family friends of mine. The shooting was posted on IG with the caption, RIP this kid. Neither one of the victims were Black, but was jumped.
So the kid, the victims were jumped.
Yeah.
And the suspects who jumped them, I guess we don't know much about. But again, who are you jumping and why at 3 a.m? Amanda says, one of the bullets from the shooting went through my husband's office window. So glad he wasn't working. Wow. I mean, think about that. Just on our live chat, we have three people who are impacted by these shootings in Seattle over the weekend. Really scary stuff. Seattle on the mayor's text, total incompetence. Delaney says, if they thought they were possibly a there was possibly a suspect still there, that should have been put out to the public immediately. Yeah, I mean, the mayor's office seems to know, oh, maybe there's still a suspect on scene, even though there wasn't. It's just all incompetence. Yeah,
maybe if the police chief was in town, he could have communicated better.
Yeah.
Yes, from WaUp 3605, incompetence at the top can't allow incompetence to be around them. It exposes them.
Yeah. No, yeah. Can't allow competence to be around them. So if you're incompetent, if you surround yourself with competence, then you look even more incompetent.
Yeah, but either way, probably. Yeah,
you do. On UW payout to Professor Stuart Regis, Stephanie says, my children's middle school and high school do a land acknowledgement before every game. It is too much. I'm so over it.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yep. RM Calm says the faculty are welded to land acknowledgments. They feel like saviors.
Yes. Oh,
a lot of them feel like that's just, you know.
Like Bill Maher says, then give it back. Unless you're going to give it back, shut up. Yep. We don't want to hear anything.
Be done.
Seattle Times being absolute trash. De Pluribus Unum says, Seattle Times, I'm sorry, I don't have a parakeet. Yeah, but then you'd have to buy the paper to line your birdcage with it, which would require giving the Seattle Times money.
Baron of Great Matter says, for $5, starting a GoFundMe to buy 10 Seattle Times subscriptions so the Pike Place Fish Market has paint wrappers. The fish will not rot faster.
Will rot faster, though, unfortunately.
Oh, will rot faster. Yeah.
That's funny. But again, that would require giving money to the Seattle Times. And the best thing that could happen would be for the Seattle Times to just go bankrupt. I asked Elon Musk over the weekend. I said, Elon, can you buy the Seattle Times and just close it? I'm waiting for a response.
Oh, no response.
Buy it
yet.
And just, he could make enough money in one day to buy the Times and then just close it. Yes.
I mean, we know some good reporters who could send over there, replace them.
Sound Transit electrocuting fish. Felicific says, if they end up killing one of the orcas, then there will be hell to pay.
I don't think the orcas are in the lake, but you know,
you never know.
That would be all right. Tricky.
Jodak, update on E9 Brewing.
I went to E9 last week, got four pizzas to share with my family who live nearby, had a negative experience, sent you a message on Instagram. Oh no.
Okay.
I will say I wasn't a big fan of E9's apology over the whole situation. So
they're backing down from the mob and apologizing?
They're assigning it to one person, you know, that donated to the income tax initiative specifically, and then they say they're not for any of the other initiatives.
Yeah.
Which I just think if you're making I don't believe them.
No.
I think they're kowtowing. So.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I like it. But
this person says they went there and had a bad experience. I'll read about it on Instagram and see what it was about. But yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people wanted to go there just to support them against the mob.
Yeah.
But
then I'm sure the mob showed up as well. So
yeah.
To shame all those people. So
yeah. Who knows? Maybe that was the bad experience.
Maybe that was the bad
experience. I have no idea what it was. Okay. All right, Nicole, thank you so much. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Oh, gosh. Gavin Newsom's already decorating the White House in his mind, you know, measuring the drapes, choosing a room for a podcast studio, maybe. Here he is on PBS NewsHour.
Governor Newsom, you're very comfortable in this format, I should say. It's almost like you have your own podcast show.
I know, but not everyone loves my guests.
Would you keep the podcast if you were president?
That's interesting. As president. A presidential podcast. That's kind of a little different, different than a fireside chat. It's kind of a modern.
It is. Is that a good idea?
I'm sitting back. I'm thinking. Oh, I'm thinking about what I'd wear. Was it a sweater? Is it more relaxing, approachable?
Depends
look?
On the season.
I don't know. I feel my physiology changed.
I don't know who grosses me out more in that situation, Gavin or the journalist. I'm not sure which one it is, but Gavin's going to be really brokenhearted if he doesn't become president because he's already got his presidential podcast planned. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you'd like to support our show, it's just $5 a month. Haven't even raised it for inflation. Less than a gallon of gasoline. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. Toodaloo.